It's Tracy Tully, and you're listening to Tracy Tully Talks at bbsradio.com, the place to be right now, streaming live with another 60 minutes of thought-provoking topics, sharing with you conversations that are relevant today, tomorrow, and in the future. Join me each week on Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, 5 p.m. Wednesday PT, hello Los Angeles. If you missed the live show, jump onto your favorite podcasting platform and you'll find me on Tracy Tully Talks. We do have some adult language, so if you have some little ones around, pop on your earphones. And hello and welcome to all our listeners today. It's Tracy Tully and you are on Tracy Tully Talks. I'm here in Queensland, Australia, and I have a wonderful guest for us today, and her name is Danielle Stearman. Danielle, which I'll refer to as Dee, lives in Port Fairy in Victoria, and Danielle is a multi-award-winning businesswoman, designer, and developer of one of her businesses that we're going to talk about today called Mibla. So welcome, Dee, to Tracy Tully Talks.
Good morning or good afternoon, depending on where you are. Hi, Tracy.
Yes, lovely to have you on board. And what's the weather like there down south in COVID-locked Victoria?
Yes, it is COVID-locked. It's not too bad today, actually. It's a little bit overcast. I woke up feeling like there must be some magic in the air down here, but it's been interesting with the lockdowns and the restrictions here, definitely. So, but I am very fortunate that I live in a very small town of about 3,000 people right on the beach. So can't complain too much.
That's good to hear, because you've been in lockdown for a long time. Literally, Melbourne's been in lockdown since March, but in the last couple of months, it's been even more severe. So tell me, how is that going? You said that you're in a small town, so you can move around all right to buy your groceries and everything?
Where I am, we're really fortunate that we've got such a really strong community sense here in this town. So as soon as the lockdown restrictions happened in Victoria, we had our local businesses really rallied around the people that were the most vulnerable. So our local pizza shop here actually started sending out pizzas to the elderly and the people that couldn't leave their houses. And there was another business here, Yanni's Kitchen, who put together food boxes and delivered those to people that were vulnerable, single mums with children. So we are really fortunate here that we had a very different reaction, I guess, to if you had have been watching the news. A lot of the CBD where my family and friends are, you know, they were fighting over toilet paper in the supermarket, and there were fights breaking out in car parks over just really silly things. The local IGA here, Colin, the manager, was actually such a sweetheart. Over the course of the lockdown, he opened all the packets of the toilet paper and issued every family two rolls per person on any given day that you would go in, to prevent any fighting or hoarding. So we sort of felt like we were a bit protected down here, but it was definitely interesting watching it unfold in other parts of, you know, not just Victoria, but the country. So I do feel lucky. It makes me very appreciative to live in a small community. It doesn't always feel easy being rural, but in these times was definitely a comfort for us.
Well, that sounds great, because that means when the borders open, Port Fairy is the place to go to support. So anyone out there, no matter where you are in the world, if you're coming to visit Australia, you need to go down to Victoria and you need to check out this unbelievable small community called Port Fairy, because it will be well worth it to know that you've got such a community like that is really rare, and that's lovely, and we want to hear more of it. So Dee, you are the owner of four businesses, listeners. Tell me, how did you get into running your own business? What was the background there?
Look, I never really had interest in running my own businesses. I was actually a manager of other people's businesses. So, and the last role that I had before jumping into this sort of entrepreneurial crazy life that I've had was I was a manager and a buyer for a big company down this way. And I fell pregnant with my son. When I was 3 months pregnant, I let my bosses know that I was due in September, and they didn't like it. They called me into the office the next day and made me redundant effective immediately. And it really came down to the fact that me having this baby due in September was going to render me unusable to fly to China and do the buys and go to trade shows and things like that. But I was more than capable and more than willing to work right up until I possibly could. And so I was 3 months pregnant with this growing little baby bump. I'd been made redundant. I was in a small town. I felt very embarrassed and humiliated. I felt like it was such a slap in the face for all of the hard work. You know, prior to that, I was their poster child. I was on TV commercials for them. I was in the paper. So a few weeks later, they actually advertised my role in the newspaper. And because of that, I took them to court. And I sued them for unfair dismissal. I won that case and settled. I got a small amount of money out of that. And so I sat at home for a long time thinking, what was I going to do? And with a growing baby, your whole world changes. You start to, you know, dip your toe into baby products and, you know, you're setting up your nursery, you've got this belly growing, you're buying different clothes. So I discovered a product that was actually in the US at the time, and I really liked the product, but I felt like the quality could be better, the design could be better. I sat with it for a month or two, and then one night I said to my husband, I actually want to develop my own brand and start a business. And he thought I was crazy because I was growing this baby, and he just wanted me to relax and sort of, you know, be calm and be, you know, quiet and look after myself. But I really am not the kind of person that can sit at home and just twiddle my thumbs and get fat on the couch. So I started my first business, which was Nibbly Bits. I had that business for 10 years. I recently sold the division here in Australia over. And yeah, it's been a ride ever since. I've gone into many different aspects of business. I've gone into different product development, met lots of amazing people. But I would now consider myself very unemployable because I don't think I could ever go back and work for someone else now, having all the fun and the experience that I've had. I don't think I could ever go back and be dictated to. So
it's amazing story, but it's a sad element in that story that you were actually as good as sat because you were pregnant. And in Australia, and that wasn't, how old's your son?
He's just about to turn 9.
Yep. So that's only one decade ago. And it's interesting you talking about that discrimination. I was in Egypt in March, and I was talking at a conference, a World Women's Conference, and I was talking about the issues in Australia with these sorts of things. And some of the ladies from Cairo said, we didn't believe that. We didn't believe that a country like Australia would have all these issues. And I said, you betcha. And talking about bosses, you know, dickhead bosses like that dickhead, I had heaps of them. And I worked for 38 years in a government organisation, and that's the Department of Education in Queensland. Believe me, there are a lot of people like that. And it's a sad, sad world when we get like that. I'd like to tell the listeners a really, really quick story, quite a funny story. A couple of days ago, I was messaging Dee in preparing, getting ready to prepare for today, and I accidentally messaged a Dee Faith. Do you know? Yep, you know Dee. So I accidentally hit that button instead of yours, and I'm chatting away, and she said, sorry, you got the wrong Dee. Anyway, I laughed like crazy. We both laughed. And then I thought, well, here's an opportunity. I'll grab it. And I said, Dee, are you wildly excited about coming to speak on my radio show? Thinking I wouldn't hear anything because she's a really busy, busy lady. And within like seconds, she's back. Yes, I am wildly excited. Give me a date. I'll be there. So I said, righto, 3rd of November, I'm pretty sure is the date. She said, there, done. And it was fascinating. She's the author of a book called The Dickhead List. And that's what made me think while you were talking to me about your bosses. So in one respect, that you had that terrible thing that happened to you. But as I always say, and in my book, I talk about when one door closes, another opens. And we hear that often. All these wonderful opportunities arise. And this is one of your opportunities. For those who don't know you, Dee, how would you describe yourself and your business style?
I am very outside the box. I'm not prim and proper. I'm not by the book. I love that saying, when one door closes, another opens. I'm very much of the mindset that if the door doesn't open, go through the cat flap, because you got to get in there somehow, or just keep banging until someone opens it for you. So I definitely don't take no for an answer. I would say my style is I am very who I am. I've made mistakes. I've learned a lot. I wear my heart on my sleeve a lot. Over the last sort of 12 months, I've been really working on my emotional intelligence in my business. I used to find things really personally affected me because I was such a, ran with my heart a lot in business and gave a lot of my time and gave a lot of my energy. And sometimes that's reciprocated really well, but other times you just feel used up and spat out and it turns really nasty. So, and it was funny that we only met, 12 months ago, Tracy, and when I was going through some of those issues that I was running with, reached out to you and said, I really need a kick in the pants. I really need someone that's just going to tell it how it is. So I would say that my style has evolved, particularly over the last 12 months. You know, when I started my business, I was so green. I didn't know how to do any of the parts of my business. I knew how to run other people's businesses. So I had those skills that I could adapt. But I soon realized that all of those lessons in the, I guess the way that I was running other people's businesses was dictated by upper management. And so when I was free to make my own decisions and my own choices and lead my own life and live my own business journey, I really started to come into my own. And I feel like that's where a lot of my success has come from, is that I really just do things my own way. And when I'm told no, I try other ways. Or I'm always of the mindset that, you can ask for forgiveness rather than permission sometimes. So I like to push the envelope a little bit and, and make sure that when I'm in a situation where I might come up against a big roadblock or have a big problem or face adversity, that I don't allow it to really stop me or really get me down. I really just look for another angle. But I would say that most people would probably describe me as very outside of the box in my thinking.
That's a nice way. I love your analogy of going through the cat flap. I think that's fabulous. I love that. I think that's great. And it's exactly right, because a failure or a mistake is neither here nor there. In the world of balance, we need both success and failure. We need it to get to that balance, to learn. So you've been in your business now, in your businesses, in the business world for 10 years, what's been the one lesson that you feel you've learned the hardest?
I actually thought about this only not long ago when I was actually speaking to a client, and, I was talking to them about all of the things that you go through in business. And I said to them, the one thing that I feel like I really learned from the most was trusting myself. And sometimes you feel like your gut's a little bit off and you still make that decision and it bites you in the ass later on. And if you think of, you really think about it, you go back to that moment of that decision and you realize your gut told you that it wasn't really the way you should have gone. So I think that really has been the one thing in business and the lesson that I've really started to really trust my gut more. And if there's anything that sort of screams ambiguous or not right, or not a good alignment, even if the opportunity seems to be incredibly, I guess you're really wanting to go that way. So if it was a retailer, for example, that wanted to take your product in, or somebody that wanted to work with you, or a partnership that would, see you elevate your profile, sometimes it's not the right move and it's okay to say no. So just that, it's okay to say no. You can trust your gut and you can run at your own pace. This business life is not a one size fits all cookie cutter. All of these people and the people out there, the coaches that sell you the coaching course that say, oh, it's A to Z. It is not A to Z, because your life and what you want out of your business and your life is completely different probably to what I want and what you want, Tracy. So really that trusting your gut and being able to say no has been such a good lesson for me, because in the beginning I felt like I was such a yes, yes, I'll do that. Yes, I can do this. And I found myself really burnt out and really scrambling to get through the day while I was juggling a newborn baby. And so I really feel like they were probably, they would really be the two that even now today, if somebody asks, trust your gut and be okay to say no.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. And saying no is a powerful, powerful word that 90% of people struggle with.
Well,
90% is a very high percentage, considering it's such a simple word, and no is recognized worldwide Two letters, no. And why is it that people struggle with saying no? Why is it, do you think, besides the fact that lack of self-confidence, what else do you think might be behind that?
I think lack of self-confidence is one, but I really feel like it's because we as humans really don't like to feel like we're letting people down. And that goes across everything. You know, there's people in families that, you know, mums that are trying to juggle, you know, at the moment, homeschool and life and shopping and bills and keeping their husbands or their partners satisfied and, you know, all of this, and then trying to have time for themselves. And we say no a lot to ourselves. So if you actually listen to your day-to-day, sure, there's times where you catch yourself and you think, you know, I'm going to go have a shower, I'm going to go cut my nails, or I'm going to go book my hairdressing appointment. And then you talk yourself out of it, or you go, no, I'm not going to do that, I won't do that. But someone else will ask you, your kids will ask you for something, your friend asks you for something, your mum asks you for something, and you always say yes. I feel like we're just so wired to other people and our need to keep others satisfied over ourselves. And I think we have the perception that should we say no, that we're going to look like we're assholes. We're going to look like we're bitches. We're going to look like, oh, she's rude. Why didn't she, you know, yes, she's too good for me, or why is she not coming to this, or why is she not doing that? And I think you just have to get over that. You don't have to be a jerk when you say no. You can just say, look, I'm really sorry, but at the moment I'm so busy, I really don't have time. You know, stay in touch. You don't have to be like, no, no, no. It's just about looking after yourself a little bit. And I think listening to your inner voice more, because we don't do that, I don't think, particularly when we're running businesses and households. We tend to take on too much of that brain chatter and not enough of our own kind of inner self-talk that we really should be in tune with. That's when your body is saying and your mind is saying, listen, you need to slow down, you need to stop, you need to say no. And when we don't listen, that's when we end up with health problems and we have breakdowns and we get overwhelmed and burnt out. I find I'm good at that now. I have a really good balance in my work and my home life. And when I say to people, yeah, I have four divisions within my company, and they're like, how do you do it all? And I'm like, I just pace myself. I don't go at anyone else's pace.
Yeah, I get that question a lot. How do you do it? And it's a matter of a discipline, isn't it? Having that routine and pacing yourself. I love that language because it is. It's like a race. Every day is like a race. You've got to get from A to B, and you start at whatever time in the morning. No doubt you would have been up early. I was up at 4:30 this morning, and round about 4:30, 5, I'm up every morning. And with that comes in, I've got to do this. And I've learnt not to pick up my phone and do my social media at that time in the morning, because for me, that is the biggest and most powerful creative time for me, that first lump in the morning. And I've already done a lot this morning, and I love it. I get really pumped about it. And I think this is part of, we can say no very easily because we know within ourselves that the word no is not offensive. So if we asked someone a question, they said no to us, we'd be right, okay, all right then, so what is it we need to do?
Yeah.
That's you and me. What I have found, especially as a high school principal and a school principal, you know, for huge, huge staff, when you say no, they take it personally.
Personally.
And it's motive. Yeah. And it's crazy because it's, well, what part of that can we fix? So if no is final, there's a reason you've asked for that person for a yes or no. There's a reason you've got a yes or no. And at the end of the day, that's that. So yeah. Why is it that we get, everyone gets so emotional? And I honestly think it's the way we're brought up as well, that we're, and especially women, people pleasers. So we've been brought up in an educational environment where we have to say yes and no. Yes, mainly. Yes, 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 all the time. And we minimize our self-worth and our ability and our confidence to say no. I love your response there and how you've mentioned that. Because it's a really powerful one, that one, for other people, and not just business people either, but for mums and dads.
And I would say this too, Tracy, it's something you need to work on. So like I said before, I reached out to you 12 months ago when I was really struggling with a lot of that stuff. And prior to that, I'd been okay. I just had myself in a situation where all of a sudden it was really affecting me, and my saying no and trying to cut ties with certain things that were happening was really affecting me. And so I would say to anybody that's listening that is struggling with that emotional intelligence, the ability to say no and the ability to listen to your inner voice, you can reach out and get help. I reached out to you and asked if we could do a session, you know, would you mentor me? And you said yes. So that really changed my whole perspective in things. And it's really interesting now, because even in the last 12 months, I've come under fire from different direction. You know, we've got competitors in our market that don't like what we're about to launch, and they're trying to, you know, counter what we're about to say about a product. And so I've really come under probably more pressure in the last 12 months than in my 9 years prior in business, but I really haven't let it get to me. And I really have turned a huge leaf. And it was from that first session that you and I did. And from then, I've really just listened and changed the narrative in my own mind to allow myself to trust myself, know myself, and be absolutely okay with saying no, walking away from something that doesn't serve me, and being really okay with myself about that decision. And I would say that even my husband, if you grabbed him right now, he would say the same thing. I've been a much more chillpreneur. I've been very on the chill. I haven't been so anxious or, you know, wound up. And even when things are coming at me, or we've got deadlines, or people are trying to, you know, trying to attack our business in, you know, competition terms, I've really just been like, game on, let's do it. Whereas before I'd be, you know, so yeah. So I have to thank you, because I feel like 12 months ago when I reached out, I took my own inner brain voice and went, I need help. I need to work on my emotional intelligence. I need to make the decision. And I think sometimes we can listen to that for quite a while, and some people will never act on that. But it's just like anything. If you want to get better, you have to learn. So thank you.
That's my pleasure. Always my pleasure. And you're talking about intuition. So many, many, many business people have that intuition that they feel like they're failing, that they're not on game, and that they're anxious, or they lack self-esteem or self-confidence. And it's at that point that they need to get immediate help. And that's in the, and you're a mentor. So in that sort of direction, you need to go to someone else to keep the emotion out of it, and get that head narrative right. And that's not failure. That's really, really smart business leadership. When you know you go to someone for help, and I cannot stress that enough, that to any listeners out there, if you are in this situation, as Dee just mentioned, then don't feel ashamed or embarrassed for asking help. It's very, very smart and very intuitive. Now, you have quite a few trophies in your collection over the years. So what do you think makes a standout business?
Interestingly enough, I get asked this quite a lot, because I've entered, you know, different business awards for both my businesses, myself as a business owner, my products. I really feel like it's being in line with your own sort of headspace around your business and yourself. I find anytime I'm up for an award that's about me, I'm just myself. So I don't try and be anybody else. I feel like a lot of people, when they're considering entering awards, or they're looking at opportunities, you know, to raise their public profile and things like that, they often, you know, look at their competition before they look at themselves. And I'm always of the mindset that you need to look at yourself. Why are you great? Why do you do what you do? Why do you love what you love? A lot of the awards that are run have such a heavy focus on finances and, you know, turnover, but that's not why everybody does their business, you know, and it shouldn't be why you think you have to measure to somebody else's measuring stick. So I really only ever go into awards that I feel like serve me in terms of marketing and promotions and my profile. Also, I really like the challenge, and I find it a really cathartic process to actually sit with myself and do an application or be judged or be interviewed and talk about where I've come from. And I'm very open about, I haven't got everything right in my businesses. I have definitely learned hard lessons along the way about cash flow, investment, trust, partnerships, you know, all of those sort of things. But that's what makes me me, and that's why I've seen the success that I've seen. So I think if you're looking at entering awards, or even putting yourself out there, even in terms of promotions and marketing, be yourself. Because we were only talking about this before we went on air, Tracy. Someone can come along and copy your, you know, your podcast, your blog. They can copy your product, the IP. They can take whatever they like from you. But the one thing they can't take is you. So That's where you can be fabulously awesome yourself and you don't have to worry about anything else or anyone else. And I think that's probably been why when I enter awards, I get such a good response from judges because I am just very myself and I don't make excuses and I don't bullshit people about things. So when I'm asked questions or I'm asked things, I'm honest about it. So, you know, if I think that's the one piece of advice I can give you is just be you. And there's a saying where people say be unapologetically you. I think you can be yourself and you can still apologize for the stuff and the mistakes that you've made. I think that term gets used a lot and I think it's the wrong term to have. I think if you've made a mistake, own it, move on. If you've had a success and you've had a huge win, celebrate it loudly and move on. So it goes both ways, but I think that really comes down to why you know, I've done well personally and with business, I've always done really unique product. So I've always tried to create my own really unique product, taken a spin on something and really put my own stamp on something, driven our own marketing our way. And that, you know, that may not be for everybody. I've entered lots of awards where I haven't placed, but I've always learned from those processes as well. And I always come back the next year and I want it even more. So
good on you. And you've got to be in it to win it, don't you? If you don't, yeah. Don't put in for it, then you know, you haven't got a chance. It's a bit like the lottery ticket, but I think it's probably a bit more successful. And awards, as you say, there are awards that are going to suit a person as an individual, a business person as an individual, and there's going to be awards that could, as you said, perhaps rely too much on the financial aspect. And you picked a really good thing about that because a really good point, I should say, because the financials don't necessarily reflect that you're a good business person.
No.
At all. And that is the difference between what is the awards about. And I see a lot of awards I could not be bothered and would not be bothered wasting my time, where I would much rather spend a bulk part of that time I allocate to writing grants for the community, which has nothing to do with my business, nothing at all. But it's something that I'm good at and I like doing. And that's the difference, isn't it?
Yes.
Have just being you and what you're there for. So that's a good standout. Don't compare, listeners. Don't compare yourself to others. That's a powerful, powerful point. Thanks, Dee. Now, speaking of standing out, you just finished creating a world first product. Can you tell us all about the Mibblers, please? I'm so excited.
Yes, I can. So I am very fortunate to have a teething toy company called the Mibblers. And I have a business partner, Lisa, who helps run this business with me. We've had the company for 3 years. It was actually a product I developed under my existing brand Nibbly Bits 3 years ago. And after launching the original version of this product, 12 months after, I saw the need to really branch this product off and take it on its own direction because it created this little cult following. Fans were really loving them. And all of a sudden I thought this marketing needs to be split off my brand. It actually needs to be its own brand. So 12 months after I originally launched it just as a product, I took on Lisa as a business partner, who is the yin to my yang. She's amazing. And
hi Lisa.
Hi Lisa. And we started running the brand internationally into the US as well. We were at the New York Baby Show and the quote that came out was au revoir Sophie the giraffe, the cool kids chew on these. We'd won so many awards with them. They were really unique. And I will show you in a second, but I ended up falling pregnant on the trip that I'd done over to America with my daughter, Bonnie, who's now 3. And when I got home to Australia, we'd sold out of products. We didn't have any products, but I picked up a few products at the baby show while we were in the US. And one of those products was a natural rubber soother, like a pacifier, a dummy. And when my little girl was only little, she started using it because I was breastfeeding. She started growing teeth. It was a little bit scary. So I'd shove this in her face and be like, here, take this instead of my nipples. And she ended up having this crazy rash break out across her face within a day of using this product. I didn't associate it with this product to start with. I actually didn't know what it was. I took her to the general doctor and he said he just thought it was a teething rash, which, you know, every mum gets told teething rash.
Yes.
And so I took her home. He gave me some cream. I took her home and Within 2 days, it was up in her eyes. It was really red. I'd continued to use this rubber pacifier because I didn't think it was the association. And I took her to my GP, who's a specialist, and said, I don't think this is a teething rash. This is in her eyes. She was really irritated and sore, and she'd never had issues like this prior. So we went through all of the things that we changed, washing powder, food, all of these things. And I couldn't think of anything. And then I had a light bulb moment where I said, well, I've given her this pacifier dummy. It's the only toy that she's played with or had. And he said, can I see it? I had it in my nappy bag. I pulled it out. He said, what's it made of? I said, it's natural rubber. He said, it's a latex reaction. So she had this awful latex, and I was like, what is a latex reaction? In the back of my head, I was like, well, our Mibblers are made from the same product, the same as other big products out there. We did the same natural rubber. And I came home, she had cream, I took the pacifier away from her, her rash cleared up within a week, and she was back to being my happy, rosy-cheeked little girl. And I had that moment where I had to go back to my business partner, Lisa, and say, Houston, we have a problem, our big problem, because I actually don't ever want a parent to be misdiagnosed that their baby has a teething rash when it could be a latex reaction. And upon learning about that, latex actually can cause an anaphylactic reaction, which can actually stop a baby's breathing. So I just had this crazy panic attack. Now, we'd always had on our packaging that Mibblers contained latex, and to test and all the rest of it, we knew it contained latex, but I had never experienced a latex reaction firsthand until I did. So we didn't have a problem until I did have a problem, and it was a personal problem. And so we decided as business partners to try and redevelop this product. But we've been doing that now for just over 13 months, and it was really, really hard. So I can show you the final product, but basically what we had to do was create a silicon version. It's a 3D toy with a squeaker. So it looks the same as our original Mibbler, but it contains no latex and no paint. So these, I'm happy to report, are the Mibblers.
Oh, aren't they cute?
So they are a quirky little teething toy. They've been developed to have really good little sensory spikes. So if you've got a breastfeeder, they can get on that. Nipples will be safe. There's no long parts, so we don't have any long legs or long limbs, and they squeak.
I love it.
They're really
I love
soft and squishy, and they don't have any hard parts. There's no wood or anything. They're a world first. They're 3D and they're screen printed. So, really excited about this product. It was something that, like I said, 13 months of development, and we didn't actually even know if we were going to get a product up. And to sink our brand when it was running hot was such a big risk. And, you know,
Risk.
particularly when you have a business partner, because it's very hard to tell somebody that we're not going to make any money and we're not going to have any more product developed and we're going to redevelop this at about an $86,000 US cost, for tooling and molding and testing and just, oh, I basically had to get my engineering degree almost in drawing and working with an engineer, and then they had to create the machine to be able to do it. It sounds so complicated for such a simple product, but it has been such a process. But I'm very pleased to have them now, and we officially launch in the US on the 28th of this month. So we've organized the fabulous Jamie Grayson from The Jamie Grayson, who will be doing the official US launch back into market. So we're really excited about that.
Oh, you'll have to let me know when that's happening, and I'll put that all over my social media and talk about it here again today. So Jamie Grayson, and that is amazing because we were going to meet you and I at the trade show in
We
America this
were.
year, weren't we? And we
Yes.
had it all set, and my partner, who's coming over, my radio show partner, I should say, who's coming over, Tony Lontis, and we were actually going to do some business together with a group of women we were taking internationally to speak. So that would have been awesome. And it's happening anyway. And I can only just imagine how difficult that would have been because I have actually seen those machines in China. And it's, it's no mean feat what you've done from Australia. And as a mum, and as a mum teaching two kids at school as well. So well done.
The
Those
homeschool hell.
I can imagine. So for those listening at home thinking that they'd like to look at creating their own product, or starting a business, what advice would you give them?
You know, the thing is with starting your business and, you know, developing a product or becoming a service business, you know, if you want to dip your toe into something and you're sitting at home with small children. I mean, I was literally working full time in a job when I had Max, who was 3 months old. I would have him in my, you know, I ran a clothing store and I had him in the change room. I'd be breastfeeding him. I'd have the staff take him for a walk, but I would work at night. So I never ever did anything that I had to really concentrate on or really focus on unless I knew I was going to be uninterrupted. So I think really work with the time that you've got and work really smart. So you mentioned before, Tracy, that you don't wake up and get on your social media because it's such a distraction from actually getting through some of those things that you could action in your day to actually progress this little idea that you have, which is exactly what I did. I turned my phone off. I don't open any of my social media windows. And if I have to concentrate on an element of my business, I do it when I get the time. If that's 30 minutes, I come out here and I work for 30 minutes really focused. And then I can put my laptop down, take my kids to the beach or the park, or just go sit on the couch and watch a movie. And I don't have the mum guilt that I used to carry. So I never used to work like this. I used to work like a haggard mess. So you would phones going off all the time, kids hanging off me. It was crazy. But I really think that you have to work within the time that you have. And that might be 15 minutes. I know some people are going to say, look, I can't even shower without my kids hanging off me. Even if it's that 15 minutes doing some market research or sketching out your ideas, you know, you can outsource things. We're so fortunate that we live in such a tech time that you can outsource a lot of this stuff to help that process, you know, come to life. You can commission a mentor to come on board with you and help you get those processes and those things streamlined. I think that really is just try and find the balance, and it's not easy. I still have days where I think, gosh, especially like we were talking about homeschooling my kids and becoming the teacher now and being in lockdown for 6 months and having a business that's about to launch and another business that's doing really well. And, you know, I have my work cut out for me some days, but I also just forgive myself and think, I can't, you know, I have a target list, 3 things I have to get done before I go to bed at nighttime. And then there's 50,000 other things on my list, but I really prioritize 3. If I get those 3 things done, I know I've taken a step forward and I can get up the next day and I can action another 3. And that's kind of how I work.
I love that. And you have to be ruthless with your time management. Excuse me. But what I do like is that you talk about the number 3. And I tell that to a lot of my clients, 3 things you prioritize in your day. That's it. Don't go for 10. Don't do this big shopping list of things that you've got to do. 3 things you have to prioritize and get done. Like an hour before I came onto this show this morning, I was meeting with a gentleman organizing a retreat for next year, a winter retreat, a fabulous retreat. So I'd already organized one out west, right out west. So that was for my gold group of lovely clients. But this was for my middle range, my silver group, and they needed a retreat. And I like really fun retreats, and my workshops have got to be fun. They can't be the run of the mill. They have to be out there. I'm a bit of out box lady as well. So I was doing that at 9 o'clock, and I said to him when he rang, I'm going to be over here shortly. I went, oh, wow, okay. Well, you're only here for a certain time, mate, and that's it. And then I'll kick you out. I've got to go. And he was the same. Absolutely the same. Vic Panisi is his name, and he's the mayor of Stanthorpe. So he agreed to be interviewed with me later on this year, and he was right. He was the same, and that's he was talking to me about how he time managed. That is the best advice you can get. So you juggle 4 really successful businesses from your home in Port Fairy in Victoria, which is less than 3,000 people, as you've told us, dealing with COVID. And you've been mentioning all the way through our interview that you have been homeschooling for a very long time, since March, in fact. So tell me, besides the time management, how do you balance running a home, being a mama, and schooling?
So full disclosure, I'm very fortunate to have my husband, who is very hands-on in our household. So he is definitely a big, big part of why I can get what I need to get done. And I think communication between he and I really just is about what we need to get done, what I need to get done in business, what he needs to get done with work and things like that too. So hats off, Scott, if you're watching. He is definitely one of the, probably the main reason. I'm also lucky to have really good family and friends. So, you know, it's not always easy, and it definitely helps having a little bit of support, even if it's someone that just can come over and have a coffee with you so you can have a big verbal diarrhea vent and then get back on with it. But look, really for the homeschool thing, I really didn't cope very well in the beginning, and I actually pulled my son out of school prior to it becoming statewide school shutdown. So I actually pulled him out 2 weeks prior to the shutdown. When COVID first broke in Victoria and was prevalent in Melbourne, my little boy's quite a skinny little fella, so he doesn't have a lot of muscle and meat on him. So I felt like if he was to get quite sick, he would probably really struggle, and he would have been one of these kids that needed to go to hospital. You know, he's healthy, he's very healthy, but he's very, very skinny. So I just didn't want to risk it. And I'm always like that. If I can, you know, have my children at home with me and there's some crazy chaos global pandemic, then that's where I feel the most comfortable. So I pulled him out of school 2 weeks early. I went down to the local store. I bought lots of puzzles and books and you name it. I bought it. And to set ourselves up, we set up a big room where we just had lots of activities and things like that. I didn't know what I was doing. I bought NAPLAN books and, you know, the stock standard educational resources that they sell you at stores. And the first couple of weeks, it was really stressful. And I realized really quickly that it just wasn't going to work the way that they were trying to sort of advise us and slowly dip us into this, you know, try and do, you know, what you can and all these worksheets, and it's got to go math, English, art, science. And my little boy doesn't respond very well to chaos. He likes, you know, to understand things. He's like me, really thinks outside the box. He has his own opinions about things, and he likes to be able to articulate that. So when homeschool actually started and we were introduced to this online platform where the teacher would pop in and there's 20 kids in a Zoom chat, it was so stressful for me. I could see my little boy struggling, people asking questions, the sessions run for an hour, and poor teachers are just, you can see how burnt out the teachers were, because they were going from, here's 10 minutes of English and writing, here's 10 minutes of math, here's 10 minutes of timetables, here's, so it was just bang, 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 and the kids weren't taking in anything. I sat there with my son and he's like, why is she going so fast? Why does Ryan keep asking the same question? Why is she focused on this one kid? What about me? And it was really, really eye-opening for me. I all of a sudden realized that this was going to be a shit show unless I got control of this situation. Yeah. My son was really going to disengage within education, and I don't know that I could get him back. So when the school shut down and everybody was in the same boat, it was really sloppy, really messy. Our school asked for feedback. I gave really honest feedback about how I didn't think it was working. The kids were feeling really, you know, some kids weren't being asked questions. Some kids were getting engaged 15 times in a session and Max would be asked one question. So I had to really step up and be like, you know, the parent that went, hey, we have a problem here and this is actually not working. And for most of it, if I'm really honest with you, Tracy, we barely have logged into those sessions, which I've stayed in communication loosely with the school, which people have thought I'm really crazy on. But I really took a step back and went, I'm really going to work with my son on things that interest him. So I sat down with him and said, what's the first thing that you want to look at and what you want to learn? And he said, space. And I thought, fabulous. So I downloaded lots of resources. We made things. We got magnets. So it was really, you know, looked up. We went outside, looked at the moon and the stars at nighttime. And so I really got to engage. But the retention rate then was he could now tell you all about space and the planets and solar systems. And, but I have to say, after experiencing homeschool and this education system that we're indoctrinating our children into, I'm so disenchanted by our education system. I really feel like we're actually doing our children no service whatsoever. I feel like we're setting them up to fail. And it's been really eye-opening. My husband and I have spoken about, do we just keep him homeschooled from now on and not send him back to school? Or do we change his school? Or do we put him in a Montessori school? Or it's been really eye-opening. But I think I've just taken the time out in my day. I block time to spend with him. I don't have business going. I don't have anything. My husband takes my little girl. I take Max. And that's how I do it. I don't try and fit in 8 hours of schooling or 4 hours of schooling. We go and do a bushwalk. We go and do, you know, a trip down the beach. We do puzzles. We do games. You know, he's on his Nintendo. He likes to play, you know, for an hour. So it's just this balance of trying to keep our household happy, because in the beginning I had friends that were literally tearing their hair out and, you know, fighting within their families and just suicidal, like really just drinking at 11 o'clock in the morning because they couldn't get through and couldn't cope. So
and it's interesting that you said you've been disillusioned, because virtually I'm not talking about a couple of people, virtually every single person I have spoken to the entire COVID period have said exactly the same thing, how disenchanted they are and how what a terrible experience it's been. And as a primary and high school principal and teacher of 38 years, I hear you. And I think teachers are probably the worldwide, I'd have to say, but definitely in Australia, are probably the most overused and over abused. And their unions are not looking after them well enough, especially for the amount of money they get paid by the teachers. So what is happening that's breaking down in these organisations across the states is that we have got this structure in place that is to the point of ridiculous, and there's none of that a connection. Now, as human beings, and Brené Brown will say this all the time, we are connectors, and we've lost that connection. I remember probably 20 years ago when we were writing all our curriculum, and as a one teacher principal, the curriculum was around the themes that we chose, and the kids had input in that, and they were fabulous. The amount of achievement you got out of it was unbelievable. These days there's a national curriculum and they have these like statements, and the statements are a load of bullshit. The wording they use in their statements are stupid, ridiculous. And I'm going to say it because I can, because I am an expert in education, and it's just not good enough. And we've seen this. So what have we seen? We've seen this huge shift, haven't we? This yes. absolute momentous shift, and we needed it. So if you're a teaching mum out there, it's okay. You are the norm. It's fine. Now, a big part of my life, I was actually what's called a school of the air teacher, which meant that I taught kids on very, very remote properties with a two-way radio over that sort of thing. I taught that. Now, I can actually say the curriculum those kids had, and the one very short little lesson they had on a can't hear you over, that was going on all the time. Those kids who are now adults, and I see them often, are fabulous. They came out of it really well because they had these fabulous structures at home in homeschooling. What shocked me and what really upset me was the fact that all these education departments couldn't cope, given that every single state has distance education. Why didn't they drop that curriculum straight into the schools? It's not hard. It's a flick of a switch and say, righto, teachers, this is what you're teaching. Oh, no. Too much comparison, too much competition here. Whoops, we might lose our kids out of our schools. And guess what? They are going to lose their kids out of the schools. I love what you're saying. And you're very fortunate. You have got your husband and family and friends. But for a lot of people, they don't. They don't have that. So, we'll have to talk about this wonderful subject another time, because I'm running out of time. We've had so much fun. Quickly, tell us all about your businesses, please. Tell everyone where they can find you, how they can purchase your goodies, and go for it. The air show is yours.
So the Mibblers, like we mentioned before, they'll be live on the new website at themibblers.com on the 28th of September. So they will be launching in the US before they launch here in Australia. We're sort of staggering those launches. I have Silly Mama, which is SILIMAMA.com. So that is a DIY crafting house. You can order silicone beads, wooden beads, bits and bobs. You can create your own really cool products at home. You can start a little side business as well. We've got lots of people that order and sell on Etsy. And Raw Success is another business that I have. Raw was set up to support business owners. I do mentoring. I have a membership club. So you pay an annual fee. You get to be part of my whole world, and I get to teach you and bring you along and share different elements of business and life and tips and tricks. And we have the Raw Awards, which have just closed for applications, which will be announced our winners on the 30th of October. So that's Raw Success, R-O-A-R-S-U-C-E-S.com. And that's pretty much it. Nibbly Bits is a company that I white label and manufacture for. So unfortunately closed the division here in Australia at the start of the year. But if you want to manufacture a silicone product, you can reach out to me. More than happy to always have that chat.
Oh, brilliant, Dee. And this is something that I know a lot of people come to me and they say, I don't know where to go to get something made. And I often wondered the same thing myself for quite some time. So now here we go. So you have raw, yeah, great. So you've got raw success. So if anyone wants to join you, it's roarsucess.com, raw success. Yep. And that's a program for our listeners that Dee actually mentors in and builds business people up, etc. And obviously she's got mibblers.com, and watch out in the US, you're going to see it first before us. And Silly Mama, SILIMAMA.com. And you can purchase these products on Etsy, is that correct?
No, you can actually purchase the products from that website, and you can make your own jewelry, you can make your own pram garlands, dummy chains, there's lots of different products, bracelets and things like that, and mobiles, and you can actually set up your own business on Etsy and then make your own money. But we supply the highest quality products, unique designs, and we've got fabulous distribution in Canada under Cara and Co as well. But you can order from our website. And if you want to start a little side hustle while you're locked down and you need a little bit of income, it's a great opportunity to get creative, even with your kids. So, yeah.
That is wonderful. Dee, that has been fantastic to have you on today. And I can see another interview together around that big topic of education, because it isn't going away. And Tracy Tully Talks is all about relevant topics for today, tomorrow, and in the future. And education is one, obviously, close to my heart, because I am an educator and always will be. You are too. And this is what we need to talk about. This is what we'll do. So I look forward to interviewing you again around that topic in terms of education, because I can see a whole radio show on that, because I know that you've got lots of suggestions there of what can be done. You talk about Montessori schools, and I've got a relative in one, and they are phenomenal. So I get to see daily pictures of him at school and what they're doing, and it just warms my heart. I really, really love it. So we're about to go very shortly. Dee, stay on board with me. Thank you so much for that. And for all our listeners, no matter where you are, please chat to me via my website, tracytully.com. You can go in there and send me an email, or mrwcoaching@gmail.com. Feel free to send me a line. A big shout out to one of my bosses. He was the best boss in the universe, Mr. Graham Ifflin, who I ran into in Brisbane yesterday. Great to see Graham, a fabulous champion of kids. And we're going to interview Graham next month. And he has a lot to say about education as well. And he did years and years and years of coordinating brilliant educational programs. So we look forward to that. So we're just about to wrap up very, very soon. So hello to Graham Ifflin and family, and Graham from PCAP, the Priority Country Area program that was Australia-wide, and that he ran here in the southwest Queensland, and I actually worked for quite a number of years across a range of different very out-of-the-box areas there. So for all our listeners today, I hope you've had lots of fun listening to us. This show comes to you from bbsradio.com. You can find me on www.bbsradio.com/Tracy Tully Talks, no E's. I hope you've had a wild time listening today, and we'll be back again Australian time, Thursday, 10 a.m. PT time, that's 5 p.m. And for everyone over there in America listening who's traveling home, I hope you had a great day, and I hope you have a lovely evening this evening. I can't wait to get over to America and meet so many people, and to visit those trade shows and expos that you'll be going to too as well, Dee. So that's amazing. So thank you. If you've got any questions for Dee, don't forget to send them to me at mrwcoaching@gmail.com, and I can forward those to Danielle Stearman, and also you can send them to roarsuccess.com, raw as in the lion roars, and she will get back to you as well. A big shout out to all your members as well. Danielle, I spoke to some of those the other night. Fabulous group there, and you've done really, really well. So thank you so much for that. Countdown's on for us, and we've almost finished. And I'd just like to remind you that if you have any topics that you'd like to us to discuss, or you'd like to be interviewed on Tracy Tully Talks, then please let me know, and we'll send out some information to you. If you're interested in sponsorship, and it's worldwide, and I've been speaking to a couple of people already via LinkedIn, you can find me on LinkedIn, Tracy Tully, T-R-A-C-Y, Tully, T-U-L-L-Y. LinkedIn is the place to find me as well. So we can interview you and lift your profile, your presence, and your profit. And I can tell you lots and lots of things that will help you in that respect. So all the very best for now. And until then, goodbye from me and goodbye from you, Dee.
Thanks so much, Tracy.
Cheers. All the best. Thanks for listening to another 60 minutes of inspiring talking points on Tracy Tully Talks, brought to you by bbsradio.com. Tune in every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Australian time, AEST, and 5 p.m. PT time in America. Leave me a message on my website at www.bbsradio.com/Tracy Tully Talks. If you're interested in lifting the profile, presence, and profit of your business, sponsorship opportunities are available. Until next Thursday, it's goodbye from me.